Now we'll get into Israel and Gaza. So we'll start with Netanyahu, who has now given the okay for a ground assault on Rafah. Rafah is mostly known as being a refuge for the many, many, many Palestinians who fled from the north of Gaza to the south. It, along with, there was another one, and it was hit, and I said its name when it did get hit, but I cannot for the life of me remember it right now. But this one, this is a larger one in the south, along the border with Egypt. Rafah has been sort of the farthest point away from Israel, well, away from the northern Gaza, I should say, 'cause the Gaza Strip is encompassed on all but two sides by Israel, and one of those sides is the Mediterranean Sea. So this is the farthest that anyone in Gaza could have gotten away from the Israeli military operation in the north that came in from the north. So the fact that, if you remember, because I remember, if you remember, back when Israel said everyone should leave the north of Gaza and go to the south, because we're only going to be fighting in the north. And you had all the Israel simps talking about how humane and humanitarian the IDF was. Oh my God. They roof knock. They knock on the roof. They drop a bomb so that the building's going to get hit. Then they try to minimize civilian casualties, all that glazing, all that cock sucking they were doing earlier. And here we are with a death toll of 31,000 people. A casualty count that is 100,000 and rising. Netanyahu, who said that the South wouldn't be hit, that it was only going to be in the North where the fighting was. He said that the fighting was only going to be in the North. The fighting was only going to be in the North. Flee to the South. We only want to fight Hamas. Here we are, at the southernmost point in Gaza, talking about a ground assault. Talking about a ground assault. Okay, so you've gone from the north of Gaza all the way down to the south, the farthest southmost point. You've shot up hospital after hospital. You've bombed one apartment complex to the next. You've bombed one refugee camp after another. And here we are at one of the largest refuges. Not just a refugee camp, a refuge. Where hundreds of thousands of people from the north have gone to escape the fighting, now you're talking about conducting a ground assault into an even more densely packed area than Gaza on average was, because of how many people have now fled and compressed into this area. Like, the number of people per square mile. Well, I don't think we can use miles here. The number of people per square yard is way higher than it otherwise would have been, be precisely because of the fact that you encourage people in the north of Gaza to flee to the south. And now you are sending a military operation into the south that is ar that has its population density artificially higher precisely because that of you telling them to go to the south. To avoid the fighting, and now you're going to go shoot up the South in a ground assault. And you're going to go bomb people. And then when people complain about the civilian deaths, you're going to say, oh, Hamas was hiding behind people. Look, Hamas does do that. But let's not pretend that you were not responsible for forcing hundreds of thousands of people into a compact area. And that you are also not responsible for the deaths that occurred from you bombing this area whose population density was artificially higher because of you. Because of you. Now, there was talk of this happening about a month ago, right? This raid into Rafah. And you saw a number of countries who had been otherwise supportive of Israel, like Canada, the UK, and to a lesser extent, the United States, where we're sort of captured. We are very much captured by the Israeli lobby. there's a video on YouTube that came across my feed saying, who really controls the U.S. government? And, you know, it's big energy, it's the Israel lobby, you know. I will be getting around to watching that video. I want to see what it does. This just made me think about that. But this raid into Rafah, when the idea first popped up, you saw a number of countries distance themselves a little bit from Israel, right? Granted, this should have been done on day one. Should have been done after month one, at the latest. Especially when Israel just sits there refusing peace offerings, refusing ceasefires. And just like with Ukraine, here we are enabling them. We're enabling bad behavior from the Israelis. At least with the Ukrainians, had they been left to their own devices, they would have made peace with the Russians by now. Had they been left to their own devices. We enabled the hawkish voices in Ukraine to get legitimacy. So much legitimacy that Ukraine is still fighting a war they can't win. And we're doing the same with Israel, except the Israelis had no intention of ever having a real peace with Palestine. They want greater Israel. They want ethnic cleansing. They want everything in Palestine except for the Palestinians. They want their oil, they want their natural gas, they want their offshore reserves of oil and natural gas, they want their land, they want their houses, they want everything that belongs to Palestine except its people. And that's what we're co-signing in this war. And back when this idea to raid Rafah first came up, you saw some countries sort of distance themselves a little bit, you know? Oh, that might be a bit too far, they say. If too far was a good minute ago, but, you know, better late than never. And now, Netanyahu has given the okay to this ground assault on Rafah. There's going to be a lot of unnecessary civilian casualties. A lot of unnecessary civilian casualties. As if the casualties already weren't unnecessary. I mean, 31,000, actually. Let me correct myself. 31,000 deaths. The thing we can give Israel credit for as of now is that the death tally isn't rising as fast as it was before. Before, it would go up by 1,000 every week. But now it's taken a month to go up by 1,000. So that's improvement. Hey, that's improvement. But that might not last. That might not last. And even with that improvement, you're looking at 31,000 deaths and 69,000 injured. Or, in other words, 100,000 casualties. When you put the 31,000 and the 69,000 together, 100,000 casualties. It's genocide. And so, while we can say that the death tally is rising slower than it was before, like I said, that might not last. Because meanwhile, in Gaza, the death toll, which has climbed to 31,000, may just be the beginning of something much worse. I saw this Al Jazeera article. And it said that northern Gaza could be hit by a famine anytime between mid-March and May. Now, there's been a whole lot of warning about food insecurity in Gaza, and there's not enough aid getting into Gaza, or they can't get food. This has sort of been persisting, a persistent issue throughout the entirety of the fighting here. But considering that the siege of Gaza has now gone on for over 6 months, right? And for a say, I heard someone say six. They put him on this. I'm like, 6 months. Whoa! No, hold on. Now, like, 6 months. That's a long time. But then you think October the 7th. So from October, November, December. That's 3 months. All right. January, February, March. March 7th marked the 6th month, half of a year of this siege, and now. It's like, oh, that's a problem. Now, there was a brief reprieve when there was a ceasefire, but that ceasefire was at the end of November. So even if we only take, you know, December, that's still 4 months of siege. where no food, no water, no medical supplies, no fuel, no electricity, nothing is allowed to get into Gaza to help them. And I talked in when I was covering Biden's State of the Union, and he was talking about getting aid into Gaza, and you know, we're gonna build a new port to help get aid into Gaza. I'm like, you don't need a new port to get aid into Gaza if that's something that we even need to be doing. We don't. We really don't. And that's not me saying, oh, we should support Israel and just not give aid to Gaza. No, we don't need to be supporting either side in this war. We don't need to be giving free handouts to Gaza just because they're in a bad situation. And we don't need to be funding Israel to the tune of $4 billion every year. They can get zero. As a matter of fact, they can start paying back the money that they there you go. There's an idea. How about you show us your gratitude and pay us back for subsidizing your existence for 75 years? You don't have to pay us back all of the $300 billion we've given you. But, you know, 10, 50 billion, that'd be nice. You're our ally, right? You know, that's where I stand. You know, if we're gonna have this, then it should be, like Trump says, a loan, so that it has to be paid back, and so there's some sort of long-term potential benefit to giving out all this money. You know, you have to pay that back, sir, with interest. Is it tough? Is it mean-spirited? Yes. But what is also mean-spirited is this: is fleecing a country for everything it's worth and then not wanting to pay back a dime. Which is what every country that receives foreign aid from the United States in the end does. They don't pay any of that back. I want to be paid back. If we're going to give foreign aid out, I want to be paid back. We don't need to be doing any of this. And ironically, just like with Ukraine, had we done literally nothing, and that includes not giving money to Israel, Gaza wouldn't need aid. A constant flow of aid into them. They wouldn't need that. Because Israel wouldn't have the faculties to oppress them to the degree that they have. Israel would have been forced by way of Hamas into a real peace settlement. And people go, oh my, you can't negotiate with the terrorists. Well, the terrorists are putting forth some really reasonable peace proposals. But I guess we're right. You can't negotiate with terrorists. We just had a mixed view of who the terrorists were, I suppose. If the savage barbarians are offering a peace, and the civilized world is saying, no, we want to kill civilians. We're after having killed 100,000, well, not killed. After having killed 30,000 and wounding 60,000 plus more, you know, the civilized world, because you remember at the beginning of this war, it was about fighting off the barbarians and protecting civilization, you know. They really tried it. And so now I'm just going to sit here and preemptively blow that up in their face. It'll blow up more as time goes on, but I'm just going to start taking these victory laps early. The civilized world, after inflicting 100,000 casualties on the civilian populace of Gaza, not on Hamas, on the civilian populace of Gaza, has refused to make peace. Why? Because they still haven't destroyed Hamas. They've barely touched Hamas. They have inflicted 100,000 civilian casualties for nothing. They've achieved nothing, they gained nothing, they haven't got a hostage back, except for when they had the ceasefire with the so-called savage barbarians who can't be trusted, who you can't negotiate with, except that one time when you negotiated with them and you got your hostages back. More hostages in 4 days and in 6 days than you got in 2 months of fighting at the time. More hostages than you've retrieved in the 4 months since. More hostages than you have retrieved in the entire 6 months of your military campaign since October the 7th. But you can't negotiate with them? No, they can't negotiate with you. You don't want peace. Israel doesn't want peace. And with 6 months of siege, because they've been besieging Gaza this entire time, now it starts to catch up. Every day of that starts to add up. We don't need to aid to get into Gaza. We need Israel to stop fighting Gaza. That's the problem. They wouldn't need aid if Israel actually sat down and made peace, but they're never going to do that if they know that we're in their corner regardless of what they do. And this is why unconditional allegiances to other countries is bad. for ourselves, because they'll do something stupid and get us into a war, and for them, because it enables them to do something stupid. But, okay, yeah, you wouldn't need this constant flow of aid into Gaza. Gaza would actually be able to, you know, build up a viable economy in their own country if Palestine had real sovereignty. But Israel doesn't want real sovereignty. They've instead chosen genocide and ethnic cleansing. And one of the things that they've been doing since the start of this war is they put Gaza under siege. No food, no fuel, no water, no electricity, no medical supplies, no nothing gets into this country. No aid, none of the aid packages that other countries are sending in, are trying to send in, none of that's getting in. Because Israel controls all of the checkpoints into the Gaza Strip. So they get to determine what does and doesn't come into Gaza. Every time aid tries to come in, they say, yeah, no, we're just going to turn that around. And us building a new port on Gaza that the Israelis will then get to go through the same customs process with is going to change nothing. Because the same obstacle to aid getting into the country in the first place is going to be right there the second the port is in. Which is why it's a dumb idea. Well, one of the reasons why it's a dumb idea. But this siege might actually be adding up now. Because, like I said way earlier at the beginning of this segment, there's an Al Jazeera article, and they talked about a UN report, because that's what they were reporting on. A UN report saying that northern Gaza could be hit by a famine anytime between mid-March and May. Now, if you've noticed, we're already in mid-March, so between now and May is what the UN is projecting. Now, the reason I give this any sort of viability now is because we're in the sixth month of the siege. So this is the time when these kinds of fears can start to be warranted, especially since you can't get aid into northern Gaza because that's the Israeli military is occupying northern Gaza. And they're definitely not going to let anything in. It's hard enough to get anything into southern Gaza. Good luck getting anything into northern Gaza, where there's still 300,000 people, civilians. And it's bad. 27 children, according to the UN, have died from malnutrition already that we know of. 300,000 people in northern Gaza. And half of the population is already food insecure. And, you know, half the population of Gaza, that's roughly 1.1 and a half million. Million people, food insecure, on the brink of being hungry. With 300,000 potentially facing a famine, just your average day in Greater Israel. And according to the UN backed Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or the IPC, I do not know what they mean by Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, why it's a classification, I don't know. We'll just call it the IPC. According to the IPC, there's a famine risk in northern Gaza. They say it's imminent in northern Gaza. And it's probably going to hit between now and May. Now, why is there a famine? Again, the siege. We're talking about a famine in Gaza because of Israel laying siege to the population of Gaza. Collective punishment, which is a war crime, you know, if you believe in war crimes. If we're starting with the assumption that war itself is a crime, and that war itself is technically a genocide, then doesn't necessarily mean much to say that this is a war crime. But if you're a signatory of, you know, the Geneva Conventions, and you say that this is something that has to be outlawed, well, that makes you a criminal if you do it. That makes you a criminal. Everything happening makes Israel a criminal. Because at the end of the day, Hamas isn't going to be the one that other countries talk to when they start, you know, making deals with Palestine. Hamas isn't going to be the ones that Israel is talking to when the final peace is made. It's probably going to be the Palestinian Authority, probably. I say probably because, you know, the Palestinians feel a certain type of way about the Palestinian Authority, but that's the recognized government of Palestine. It's... they... Everything that they do makes them a criminal. And the reason I draw the distinction between Israel and Hamas is because Hamas is functionally the military of Palestine, but they are essentially outlawed by every other country from ever representing Palestine because they're a terrorist organization. They are. That's what they are. That's how they fight the war. That's the means by which they're fighting this struggle for Palestinian sovereignty through terrorism. And it's working for them. But because of that, they will never be the ones to represent Palestine internationally. That's probably going to be the Palestinian Authority or whatever other government that the Palestinians put into place. So for as much as we can sit here and say Hamas did this crime and this crime and this crime and this crime, they're not going to be the ones who have to face the music for that. The Israelis will. Why? Because the Israelis are a government. They are a national entity. And they are recognized internationally as being the government entity, even from countries that don't recognize Israel. They will be the ones to face the music here. And everything they do in Gaza makes of them a criminal. So now that we are entering into we're already in month 7 of the siege. Well, no, we're in month 6, all right? You start in October. We're in month 6 of this siege, right? As we move forward, because March is already halfway over, and you go into month 7 and month 8 and month 9, people may actually start dying of starvation. And that's... You want to talk about, you hear all these people, oh my God, the pictures, look at the pictures, oh my God, the pictures, you know, how I sort of sat here and said, maybe it's a good idea to stay off Twitter for the meantime, between time, because of all the excess information, because there is an excess of information, and not all of it can be, you know, filtered through particularly quickly when you have so much being dumped onto to the public at once. Look, I'm not calling for censorship. No, it just takes a minute to process that much information, especially when there's a lot of emotions involved. So I sort of took a step back from Twitter. But everyone was going, oh my God, look at these pictures. And you had Ben Shapiro showing pictures of dead babies that didn't exist. The dead baby hoax. Oh my, the beheaded babies hoax. And all these hoaxes to paint Hamas, the savage barbarians as, you know, savage barbarians. Just find out they weren't true. And then the downplaying of Israeli atrocities. You know, your little girls getting hit by flashbangs. And children being pulled out of the rubble. And it's, oh my God, the pictures, the videos, look at the video. You want to talk about, oh my God, look at the pictures, look at the videos? If this is as bad as the UN believes it is, which it might get in the coming months, it might get that bad. But if this starvation problem becomes as bad as the UN believes it will, and since we're in month 6, I think that we might start to get there in the near future, if it's as bad as they think it's going to be, then we're going to start to see pictures and videos of people emaciated, starved, and they're going to look in a shocking and dark twist of irony. They will look like Holocaust survivors in Gaza. You know how the UN, you know exactly what I'm referring to when you saw the images of the Jews in these camps when the soldiers finally came across them and they were down to the bone, almost like walking skeletons, and they were just lucky to be alive. A miracle that they were alive. That's what it might start to look like in Gaza if this problem is as bad as the UN believes it is. And if we're at that point now, between now and May, when we start to see famine and people dying from starvation, that'll be the final nail in the coffin. Those images, you want to talk about, oh my God, look at the pictures, look at the images, look at the video. That'll be the final nail in the coffin, Fraser. The PR battle, the public relations battle, the propaganda war, the information, it'll be lost decisively when all these Israel simps are forced to look at the consequences of this country, this foreign entity that they've been, you know, simping for and saying could never do anything any wrong. When they start seeing pictures of Palestinians looking like Holocaust survivors, there's not going to be much they can say. And you're going to see us just slowly walk away from this Israel thing. And the pro-Palestinian voices will win out. Now, the pro-Hamas voices will be gradually drowned out as well. You know, the from the river to the sea people. But the pro-Palestine, because there is a difference. There's a conflation, there is an overlap, but there is a difference. The pro-Palestine view is going to win this argument. It's just a matter of how long it takes for the Israel simps to wake up to that. For the Israel simps to realize that the country, the foreign entity, that because it's not America. We really don't have to sit here and pretend that everything they do is fine and dandy. It's we have no allegiance to these people. I've just, you know, I throw that out there, you know, as, you know, the olive branch. But when the Israel simps finally come to that realization that perhaps they don't have to co-sign on everything that Israel does, perhaps that if the Israelis really are the chosen people of God, that the chosen people of God wouldn't be doing, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing in Gaza right now, you know, to their fellow man, their fellow Semites. We talk about anti-Semitism. Well, the Arabs, Muslims, that's Semites too. You know, they're all Abrahamic. The Abrahamic faith. Christianity, Judaism, Islam, it's all Abraham. But this, I bring this story to you because we're in we're in month 6 of the siege. It really could start to get that bad in the near future. And if it does, that's it. That's it for Israel. Though the pictures of emaciated, walking skeletons in Gaza will kill Israel and will kill the legitimacy of the Israeli state. Because their legitimacy as a state is derived explicitly from the Holocaust. So for them to inflict a Holocaust-type scenario onto the Palestinians, it's done. It's over for them. We really don't have to get to that point. The Israelis don't have to get to that point. We could turn this around right now if we just stop giving them money and weapons, but people aren't going to do that. We could stop. Israel could stop right now and make peace on their own terms. They're not going to do that. And so the only option out is to hit rock bottom. Now, we can walk away from rock bottom because we don't live there. But Israel won't. Because they do live there. But at the end of the day, that'll be a disaster of their own making. But shoot, don't say I didn't warn you. Don't say I didn't warn you.